And we are, as a people, inherently and historically
wake up.
Opposed to secret societies, the secret oaths, and the secret proceedings.
The show that asks questions about why we don't ask questions.
What the hell is going on?
This is Conspiracy Queries with Alan Park.
Welcome to Conspiracy Queries. These are Conspiracy Queries, and I am Alan Park. I might sound a little different. I'm recording in a different location now. Yes, and things change, and even though the room is similar, and the wires are similar, and the microphone is similar, everything's different, so it sort of sounds different. A lot of people have been asking me, where have I been? So thanks. I don't even need to tell you where I've been to express my thanks that you're concerned about where did I go. I was in Toronto the whole time. That's the end of that story. No, it's a little more interesting than that. We'll get to some of it later on the show, but I have much to say about my absence and why it happened and how long it took, and I'll get specific on that later, because I've got a great guest today, and her name is Dina Ray. You want to check her out at dinaray.co. I'll spell that for you because it's a bit of a, you know, kind of a surprise. dinaray.co. That's where you want to go. And she's an author, and she has written a couple of books, and you can get them on amazon.com. I think they have a Kindle edition as well, or perhaps only. I'm not sure, because as I will reveal later in the interview, I didn't really know anything about Dina Ray before I interviewed her. That's the first time that's ever happened. Usually I go looking for people and hope people have an interesting story or a particular point of view, and anybody that has already listened to the show knows this. So it was kind of a landmark for me to come back after quite a time with some different MO, a different way of operating. So this author sent me a letter, also inquiring about my absence lately, and she said, I'd like to be a guest on your show sometime if that's possible, and she forwarded me some information, and I thought, great, let's have her on right away. Because the truth is, her story in this book called Big Pharma, Big Agra, Big Conspiracy goes right along with the reason for my absence over the last several weeks and a journey that I have undergone since the beginning of 2013, which coincidentally lines up with this whole show. So I thought, okay, maybe that's serendipity, and even if it isn't, it's a fun interview. You can also find Dina Ray at dinaraysrightstuff.blogspot.com. And I've had a tough time saying the word blogspot lately. I'm sure my dentist will be interested in why that might be. You can also reach her on Twitter at Halo of the Damned. You know how to spell all of that. At Halo of the Damned. That's Dina Ray. We'll get to her shortly. But hey, it's summertime, and I'm trying to enjoy this. And it turns out we're going to have a polar vortex here in Canada. What? In the middle of the hottest month of the year, apparently it's going to be quite cool later. You know how it is when there's global warming and every month is cooler than anything on record. Sort of problem. Okay, so bring your canoe and bring your swimming shoes if you have to walk on the rocky sort of floor of the ocean or the floor of the lakes or the floor of the rivers. And make sure you got some suntan lotion, but also bring your parka, apparently, if you're going to camp in Canada. Great stuff! A polar vortex in the middle of the summer. Fantastic. If you detect sarcasm, you'll understand how disappointed I am, and many people are, and I hope they're wrong this time. I really do. The weather people, they often are, but sometimes on the big things, they get it. We did have a polar vortex, whatever that means. Back in this terrible winter, and of course this is a little hangover now that we have to deal with, and perhaps there's manipulation behind it, I don't know. All I know is it sucks. And maybe we'll get into that later, about why and how, with a different guest who knows about these kind of things, because I don't. But I do know that I'm living in Canada, and I do know that my leader is lying again, because he woke up this morning. That's how I could tell. He's a liar. He says, regarding this particular reawakening of the struggle, call it battle, between Palestine and Israel, specifically Gaza and the entire country of Israel, Well, there's a skirmish going on there again, and I don't know what side of the issue you're on. But it's a very contentious issue. It always is. But I do know that when a leader of a country, supposed leader of a country, he's not really. This is a big old scam somehow everybody's buying into. But a lot of people believe him to be the guy, and he gets on the international stage and, like a fat, toady little liar that he is, says this: on behalf of all Canadians, we support everything Israel's doing. Well, once again, Sir Harper, you're wrong and dead wrong at that. You don't represent all Canadians. All Canadians don't feel that way. This is a very complicated issue, and hardly anybody is on one side or the other fully. I mean, there are certainly vested interests on both sides, but you just can't sit there and say, on behalf of all Canadians. You're lying. You're not on behalf of all Canadians. This guy claims he has a majority government, and when you really break the numbers down, the only majority that Harper has in this country is that most people do not want him to be there. This has been reflected recently in a provincial election. Now, listen, I'm not a fan of political parties one way or the other, and I think anybody listening to the show knows this already, but I do recognize that a lot of people do believe in it. And despite an admitted level of criminality and wrongdoing by the former leader of what is the Red Party here, I don't need to name them, they're the Red Party, center-left, mostly center. Those guys, well, they decided that even though there's been corruption and scandals, they were overwhelmingly put into power. And a lot of people that complained about the leader of that party, whose name is Kathleen Wynne, not really being the elected leader of the people of Ontario because she had to replace a chump named Dalton McGuinty, who has somehow escaped any kind of restitution or even accepting the blame or some kind of shouldering the problem that he created by shutting down a lot of gas plants en route to making some fuel production issues a necessary thing for people in Ontario. Listen, I don't even understand why a coal plant's a good idea. I do know a lot of people are upset by him. Doesn't matter, though, because his subsequent team, the Red Team, the Liberals, have swept to power solidly. So for anybody that's going to complain about the fact that Kathleen Wynne's not really elected by everybody, yes, she is. So shut up and let us see what they're going to do. So that's been a nice little part of this summer. The people that complained she wasn't well represented have to shut up and just let her see how far she can take it. Now I figure she's going to make a lot of mistakes and irritate a lot of people, and I'm sure I'll be on her case for all kinds of things because she is a politician. But for now, can we just get a little break from the whining blue team and just have them shut up? You know, it's kind of a right-wing tactic to say, just shut up. So I thought I might try it and see how it works on those right-wing people that are just so always on the wrong side of decisions politically. It's astounding, trying to vote against the women vote and all of the insurgence of religious doings inside a political system that's supposed to be separated from church and state, and they don't have to pay taxes, but they do get to say, oh, you should do this and you should do that. Well, they ought to shut up, too. Kind of sick of all these people. And let's move over to a little bit of Canadian news, because it's also North American news, as this green juggernaut unfolds and people start to realize that marijuana, that terrible name that was dreamed up to discredit a wonderful plant known formerly as hemp, well, the marijuana situation is busting open as people in Colorado are realizing, hey, this stuff does stop cancer, and hey, we don't need laws against it, and hey, don't tell me what I can do to improve my health. You do not get in the way of that. And a lot of people are starting to realize this. And in British Columbia, Canada, we have a story coming out of, I'll take this from the CBC, a company that rarely delves into the actual truth, but they do have a report here that says British Columbia, the province of beautiful British Columbia, could become a testing ground for legal recreational marijuana sales if a particular professor at UBC gets his way. Oh, good. It just takes one professor at an astute well-known university to try to turn the tide. It says here that legal sales of recreational marijuana started in Washington this week, but BC says it won't consider it. That's because in Canada, non-medical marijuana is illegal under the federal criminal code. That's right, folks. If you want to take a plant that's growing out of the dirt that's outside of your window, no, no, no. That's illegal. You'll go to jail for that. Somehow it's okay to sit at Earl's outside and have a salad. You don't have to pay any kind of licensing fee for that, just to cover the cost of the lettuce. But these clowns think they could tell us what to do. Now, I know that a lot of you people listening out there are completely aware of the fact that they cannot. So we have to make that clear to them, that they cannot, regardless of Section 56 exemption, blah, 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 blah. It doesn't matter. The silly little rules, they don't apply. Okay, we had a lot of people going to jail for 20, 30, 50 years because they decided to take something that they felt like they could and wanted to take. And it's not my job to tell them whether they can or can't or should or shouldn't. But it is my job to point out that people telling you that you can or can't or should or shouldn't should go straight to, oh yeah, I'm trying not to swear on this one. Sometimes that's difficult. So, where does that leave us? Well, it leaves us at a place where people are allowing other people to tell them what's to do. What's next? You're going to ask, what time? Is it okay if I go to the bathroom, miss? Is it okay if I eat these poppy seeds on my bagel, or do I need a license for that? Are we tired of this kind of thing? Are we tired of being told what to do when that is absolutely not necessary? And oftentimes by a man who says, on behalf of all, anytime anybody ever says, on behalf of all people of one country, that guy might as well be saying, hey, everybody, I'm big, I'm fat, and I'm stupid, and I'm telling you a lie. And you better believe it, because I want you to. And if you follow these cats, you know what? You're not thinking. And I'm kind of getting tired of talking to you. Kind of like my little kitty who handed in a project or wanted to do a project at school. It was some kind of thing like a do a famous person, do a little expose on a famous person. And sure, people chose Shakespeare and, you know, racing car drivers and that kind of thing. And my kitty picks Tesla with her partner. And they kind of didn't really want her to do that. Didn't really want her to go down the Tesla road. Talk about this guy because he had a lot of radical ideas. Because he came up with a lot of fascinating things. No, that's not why. Because they hadn't heard of him. They didn't know who he was. I guess they felt like they couldn't mark the paper successfully if they don't know who Nikola Tesla is. And if you don't know who Nikola Tesla is... Sorry. How is it again? You're calling yourself a teacher? Oh, yeah, you don't have an answer for that. Well, I understand. We don't have an answer for the clowns and the morons and the criminals that populate supposedly elected offices. And I am so looking forward, one way or the other, to the current fella checking out of that particular office. And I don't care how he does it other than ASAP. Now, another quick story on medical marijuana. It's interesting. It says here in the CBC, this is July 10th, 2014. It says, vaporizing marijuana reaching trend status, Canadian doctor says. Oh, what kind of trend is that? It's been going on a long time. And why is that? It's considered a safer alternative to smoking it, says a Canadian doctor. Vaporizing involves placing either raw cannabis or THC oil into a portable vaping pen or non-portable plug-in machine. This product is then heated until right before the point of combustion, turning the components of the plant into a gas that is released as vapor. Yeah, and it's also wonderful, wonderful stuff. And lots can be said about it. Wonderful things, and I'll get to that later in a different show. But listen to this doctor who says, quote, I think it's still trending up in that a lot of people aren't really aware of the health benefits of vaporizing. And then he corrects himself and says, or at least the harm reduction aspects of it. Says Dr. Ian Mitchell, an emergency physician and clinical assistant professor at the University of British Columbia again. But I think it's inevitably coming, he says, this whole trending of things, because as much because of the medical marketplace as the institutional use. Although medical marijuana has been legal in Canada since 2001, cannabis is listed
as an illicit drug under the Controlled Drugs and Substances Act when the user doesn't have a prescription, when the user was a person who didn't feel like submitting his own destiny to a bunch of suit-wearing, paper-pushing assholes who don't deserve to be there and need to be making clear to everyone that puts them there that they are as bogus as I say. You don't need to ask permission for this stuff. You need to have the foresight and the intelligence and the free will to choose it or not. And that's it. But this pustulant goofball that we seem to allow to sit in the highest chair of the land, I said with false admiration, to tell us these things. Well, you might want to consider following all the laws. If you're a law-abiding person, you may think that's a good idea. And if you do, I understand that. You probably believe that those laws are based on any kind of truth and any kind of reality. But they aren't. They're based on fiction and lies and people getting rich in the process. Because as you know, for years, people have been taking this stuff, dealing with it, buying it, growing it, helping themselves with it. And for years, it has absolutely been totally illegal. And that's true. But the fact of the matter is, that doesn't matter. Any more than it, you don't have to go upstairs to your kitchen and get yourself a jar of peanut butter and ask if that's okay. Is it okay if I take this natural substance into my body? Do you mind? Oh, I can only buy it from one place, so says the government, my peanut butter from now on. And if that peanut butter comes late, it just won't be available to me. Or perhaps they'll microwave it, therefore removing all the nutrition from it. That's what you want me to do by paying my annual license to be able to enjoy this thing whenever I feel like it? Is that okay? Well, if any of that was based in truth, then that would be easier to understand why so many people blindly follow what these friggin' liars toss out on a regular basis. So if you're one of those people, I'm asking you to take another look at the whole spectrum of what it means to be illegal and not legal, and why it's okay one day to drink beer, but the day before it was illegal because the government said so. It was called prohibition. It was happening back then. It's happening now, and they're trying, the governments are, to transition themselves to profit from the intake of this particular substance, and they're trying to make sure they make a lot of money at it, and they're trying to build industries to take something that's free and available and in the ground and turn it into something that's still illegal if you don't buy it from the guys that want to make a lot of money at it. This has happened with television signals and, I'm not going to go on with all this. You know exactly what I'm talking about. So basically, light up, smoke up, don't worry about it. And just because they're putting a guy in jail and, where's this guy? Somewhere in the States, I can't remember where he is now, it doesn't even matter. Some guy was sick with cancer and he decided to get on this stuff and help himself. Well, they're going to put him in jail for the rest of his life. They're criminals. You don't need to follow what people that do that kind of thing say. It's thoroughly unnecessary, and it's going to retard the development of the human race if you keep this up. So just understand that when people like these doctors and these professors say certain things about these certain substances, even though it seems like it's freeing it up, it often isn't. Like this fella there, Dr. Mitchell, or Professor Mitchell. He says, Well, last month, a commentary in the Canadian Medical Association Journal sparked a debate among doctors about medical marijuana use. Really? They were even talking about it. I find that astounding based on my own personal journey. I can speak to the opposite is what I'm saying. But this little debate last month was sparked, and it says that the topic has been raised in the medical sphere since Canada's marijuana for medical purposes regulations, the MMPR, came to effect this year. This is entitled, New Medical Marijuana Regulations, The Coming Storm. The commentary emphasizes the need to have clear guidelines for Canadian physicians who may be asked to prescribe dried cannabis to their patients. Well, if it's like any other natural substance, such as foods and nutritional properties, your doctor isn't going to have a friggin' clue on how much to prescribe or not. What he is going to know is that a lot of the times if he does prescribe that thing, well, it's going to work a lot better than the prescription drugs that are called treatments rather than these kind of things that are cures and therefore short term and therefore less money involved and therefore let's get into the business of that and start profiting from it. Here's a talking point mentioned by the authors of this report, Dr. Meldon Kahan and Dr. Anita Srivastava. And apparently this has been under-discussed, this particular aspect I want to get into right now, and it is that according to Kahan, who is also a medical director of substance use at Women's College Hospital in Toronto, he says, although both vaporizing and smoking marijuana are equally effective in delivering levels of THC to the brain, the concept is not that simple, and they go on to explain why that is. Are you ready? While it might be safer in protecting people from chemicals, it doesn't necessarily prevent the harms of cannabis. And what are those? You know, like, statistically. Oh, you're still looking? Okay. Well, here's what they are if you can't seem to find it. This Kahan says it doesn't make it a safe medicine. It makes it a safer medicine. Do they even care about such things? You would not believe some of the side effects I've had to ride on their prescribed things. That once they didn't work and want to switch to something else. It's not really science. It's a spinning a wheel. A roulette wheel. But here are the harms of cannabis they were so concerned about. Intoxication. And cognitive impairment. Oh, no, really? Intoxication and cognitive impairment? You mean like when you're drunk and you slur? And then usually get behind the car and then usually beat somebody up where you don't have that kind of thing with marijuana. The harms of cannabis. You know, sometimes they say that, if we could only genetically manufacture out the fact that you feel high after that, or you feel giddy, or you want to laugh because this is a terrible thing that people shouldn't feel. Well, can you believe how backwards that is, particularly when laughing and having a good time and feeling well contribute to one's overall well-being and healing? This is not me saying this, and if you're thinking this is a joke, then I guess you haven't done sufficient any kind of research on this. But I know most of you do. And most of you have. And I'd like to thank you all. So many people, I'm so touched by this. Letters, not real ones on paper. I mean, come on, that's not going to happen anymore. But emails and some Twitter things and some Facebook notions. And people have been very, very kind about my absence. And they've been very, very concerned. And while that touches me, I'm like, hey, don't worry about it. I'm good. I'm here. One thing led to another. But thank you so much for tuning in and wondering where I went. And I'm back. I didn't go anywhere. I just had to lie low for a while due to some medical conditions that I will explain shortly in an upcoming broadcast. But I'm sure I'm going to dance around it here and there. And I'm certainly going to dance around it here and there today with our guest, Dina Ray. So let's go to our interview. Hey, everybody. Thanks for tuning into Conspiracy Queries, and I have to answer a query of yours, which is, where have you been lately? What's been going on? What's with all the reruns? And how come you didn't tell us you were going to go on a sabbatical? Some people use the word hiatus, but because of once upon a time with my hernia, I don't like going that way. But I was just, I took a week off, okay? So get off my case, everybody. Holy cow. I mean, thanks for asking about me. I took a week off because I had to set up somewhere else, and it probably sounds different here where I am now in an undisclosed location. Still in Toronto, though, so if you run a heat seeker, you'd probably figure it out. But I needed a week off from the radio station, and then something really strange happened. I don't know if I'll ever get into that, but trust me, it was very strange. And so this kind of delayed things to 2 weeks. And I thought, okay, I'll get back to it. And I was kind of getting ready to do another show. And then something else very strange happened. And this was a bit of a personal thing that I certainly won't discuss on the show, but just trust me that it was heavy and I had to deal with it. And I wish I could say I was wonderful at dealing with it. I just was perfect and I got everything done perfectly. But that would be a lie. I had a great deal of trouble with this stuff. And overall, in a general sense, I will talk about that later. So far we have things we will and won't talk about. Perfect. Well, let's move on to thanking you for tuning back in and asking me all these questions. It made me feel good that a lot of people were wondering what happened. I thought, oh, yeah, I better get back to them. And so thanks. And you know who you are. And you know who answers that mail is me. So that gets right to the source. That's cool. So thanks for sending that stuff in. It made me feel like I'm on the right track, at least a little bit of the time. And I know I'm on the right track because I've been contacted by someone who is an author, and I'm looking forward to having her on the show. And you can check her out while we're talking. She's at dinarae.co, and I'll spell that for you, dinarae.co. And she has just written a book, and she is right here on the line. Good evening, or good morning, or wherever you are. How are you today?
I'm great. Thanks again so much for having me.
Oh, you're welcome.
Sorry to hear about your hiatus.
Oh, that's okay. Oh, please don't use that word. Ouch. No, that's just a red herring. It had nothing to do with a hernia hiatus or a hiatus hernia or whatever you're talking about. But it was kind of difficult to manage regardless. But thanks. Yeah, I'm through that now, and it feels great to be on the other side of that kind of thing. So let's forget about that stuff now. And I'll address that later in future shows, but it's going to be something that we are going to talk about back and forth a little bit, because you're going to tell us something about your book, which is a little bit of a takedown on the, what'll I call it, the pharmaceutical cartel. Is that about right?
Cartel is a very good word for what they do and who they are. It's called Big Pharma, Big Agra, Big Conspiracy. And it's about how these two industries, pharmaceutical and agricultural industries, are basically taking over the world. And I'm a big fan of New World Order conspiracy theory. And
wait a minute, you're a fan of conspiracy theory? What do you mean?
I believe that it could be by next year, it could be in 20 years from now, but it's coming very soon, that we will be a one world government.
Oh, okay. I got you. All right. I just wanted to not assume. Okay. Carry on then.
I'm kind of looking at these two corporate giants in terms of how they relate to running the world and how they fit into globalism and how they've ruined our democracy through greed. And that's pretty much the angle that the book is taken. Before I wrote this book, I knew very little about Big Pharma and Big Agra, and I was asked to do some editing for a medical book, and the author used the term Big Pharma, and I'm embarrassed to say at that time I wasn't quite sure what he meant.
You thought he was Italian and talking about a really huge sort of a hog ranch or something? Big Pharma!
I had to Google it. Let's put it that way.
Oh, don't we all?
And once I you know, read about it, and then it, of course, crossed paths with Big Agra, which is, you know, we're talking Monsanto and Syngenta and DuPont.
Mm-hmm.
And
the devils themselves.
I am a writer, and I felt compelled to write about this. And it is, if you're really into Big Agra and Big Pharma and you seem to know everything about it, then the book might be too watered down for you. You'd probably still walk away with learning some new things, but the book is primarily meant for just your everyday Joe Schmo who's heard the terms, They understand that people are protesting Monsanto, but they really have no clue why.
Yeah. Well, tell us why. Let's take a little jaunt down Monsanto Road and just give a few bullet points here of some of the most concerning things. We don't need to go all the way back to the bovine growth hormones in the milk that the Fox expose once upon a time almost revealed, but they didn't let that story air. Eventually YouTube came along and we all got to see it anyway, and that's how they shape the news, or what we have been told is the news, laughably. But don't go that far back. Let's see, what are we dealing with right now? Two or three hottest things from Monsanto we should be on guard about.
Well, it's in the news recently. We've got Vermont fighting with Monsanto in terms of food labeling. The good people of Vermont want GMO labels on their food so they know exactly what they're eating. And
so what are they, a bunch of commies or something? Or what do you mean?
Well, Monsanto and other GMO corporations, of course, don't want GMO labels on the food because people might understand what a GMO actually is.
Well, I think you'd make the logical, choice. No, I don't want that. If I can see it, which one is, which one isn't. Obviously, it's the bottom line is they can make the crap stuff cheaper and quicker, and that's what they want us to eat.
Right. And Monsanto, I hate to keep picking on Monsanto, but there are other.
Oh, no, go ahead. It's okay. You got lots of time to pick on those guys.
Well, they are the biggest, and they spend $2 million a day on research. They want everything genetically modified, and they want their patents, and they want to, money. And it goes as high up to the President Barack Obama being in bed with them. He passed the Monsanto Act last year.
Well, can you clear this up for me? I've been kind of in and out of my technical awareness of whatever passes for government. But didn't he bring into from Monsanto as the head of his FDA or something? Is that right? Or did I mess that up?
No, you're absolutely right. The FDA is full of Big Pharma and Monsanto employees.
It's a bit of a pattern, huh?
Oh, you're totally right. It's a revolving door. They work at Monsanto or they work at a Big Pharma corporation. They go sit at the USDA or the FDA for a while, approve their company's drugs or approve companies on food.
Approve their food. Is that what they call it? Listen, that's a lot of reading to do when you pick up some kind of package. It's like, whoa, that's a lot more syllables than mama used to teach me before I went to school. Wow. Yeah, if you got to spend that much time on a snack, you're probably not supposed to eat it, I think.
Yeah, exactly. It's we're eating chemicals, and then we're coming up with all of these new diseases that we're controlling with more chemicals. And people wonder why there's all these crazy, violent things going on. Well, we're all just so chemicaled up. I mean,
let me just say that a lot of these chemicals in the supposed, sorry to laugh, but it's funny, the foods we're supposed to take and these other things that are happening in the environment. So you're spending money to get that way also, you know. You're giving up a lot of your own economic power to take this garbage in. And then guess what happens later on? You're probably going to get sick. And who are you going to pay to get out of that situation? The same folks. It's unbelievable how they got it coming and going.
Yeah, it's a real racket. And we're so helpless about it. Even organic food, in the United States, organic food only has to be 90% organic because of cross-pollination, or maybe there was something in the fertilizer that kind of ruined the organic setup, or there's a few reasons, but you spend double or triple at the grocery store for organic meat and organic fruit and whatever, and it might not be organic. So,
well, what do you know about the boards or the organizations or whatever they call themselves that are the official, organic growers of, United States of America, whatever the board calls themselves, how compromised are these? Or are they free of compromise? Are they 100% perfectly effective? And are there different varying competing boards of that demand certain standards from the farmers?
Well, the USDA is in charge of officially putting the organic mark on the food, at least in the United States.
And, with like a Sharpie or something, or how do they do that?
It's some kind of stamp.
Okay.
You'd know it if you saw it.
Ooh, okay.
And a sticker or a stamp.
Oh, and, okay. Yeah, like a USDA government-approved meat or whatever, like a little... Like it won an award at the county fair.
Yeah, and it's expensive.
Sure. Well, it's taking in a lot of water and a lot of stuff to make that little bit of meat, you know, that too. That's why they got to charge all that money, because that's a lot of water to get in there.
Well, the labor that is required to grow organic food is something like 2 or 3 times more expensive
sure.
than the labor involved in the GMO seeds. And they've got to have special fertilizers. Well,
I guess that's why they like to hire a lot of Mexicans sometimes. Oops, don't have my papers, but hey, I got a pretty good wage. That's just from what I've heard. I don't know for sure. I've never been to Mexico. What am I saying these things for?
Well, it's not a cheap lifestyle, to say the least. And
yeah, it's expensive.
More and more and more acres going GMO anyway. Soon it'll be even more expensive because of, you know, supply and demand.
Yeah. Well, who do you think funds these refutations of the doom and gloom about GMOs? Like a lot of people say, oh, this isn't good. And then every once in a while, a report will come out that involves some gigantic tumors on a series of mammals like rats and mice and stuff. And then later on they'll say, yeah, no, that doesn't have anything to do with this. And it just kind of ping-pongs back and forth. Is there no way we can learn the actual thing, the actual result on some of these heavy chemicals that they say are fine, but obviously if they're leaving tumors on mammals, I got a bit of a problem with that in my snack.
Absolutely. Well, there's been a couple of whistleblower, per se, doctors who have run some studies that really show the danger of some of the GMO food, and they've, you know, lost everything. One that comes to mind is, his name is Dr. Poutse, and I think he's from either Ireland or Scotland.
Mm-hmm. And, Poutse.
P-U-T-S-A-I.
Okay.
And he did a test on genetically or modified potatoes. And
well, he's probably Irish then. It wasn't the Scottish guy then. It was probably an Irish guy. They've got a vengeance there, too, that goes well back.
Oh, yeah, because Irish and the potatoes, mm-hmm. maybe. Offhand, it was either one of those two countries. And he was funded by the university to actually go in the other direction and prove how they were safe. And the rats had all of these, their organs were all different shapes than they were supposed to be. They had tumors. I mean, it was a complete disaster after a short amount of time feeding them these genetically modified potatoes.
Mm-hmm.
And he lost his job. He got shut down.
Because he accurately predicted this, is that, or showed this? Is that why he lost his job?
He went on, instead of just telling his colleagues about his study, he went on the BBC and announced it on a talk show.
Mm.
And that's when the, you know what, hit the fan.
Yeah, well, yeah, you can say what it was, but we probably already know. Well, tell us, let's move into a couple of different areas of your book where you really take down pharma. Like, what's going on with pharmaceutical drug manufacture and distribution? And let's get into some marketing, too. I mean, is there any kind of thing that a kid does anymore that can't somehow be twisted into a diagnosis for a prescription drug?
Don't get me started. Well, big pharma is typically defined by a corporation who makes more than $3 billion a year. And the top big pharma companies are Johnson & Johnson and Pfizer, Novartis, Roche, Merck, Sanofi, GlaxoSmithKline.
Oh, okay, I got to stop there. Those are all sponsors of my show. I won't have anything said bad about them. Now, you just back off, lady. Those folks have put some pretty comfortable furniture under my bum, so just settle down. No, I'm only kidding you. Of course, they're the guys. They're the lead players in the multi-billion-dollar field of at least $3 billion to join this club.
Yes.
Yeah.
Six of the top 10 or 11 are in the United States. I think so. United States again is behind some nefarious stuff, and they really monopolize the whole patent thing. They get a patent for their drug, and that lasts 20 years. And then when the patent's up, they do what's called a Me Too drug, where it's the same drug, except they're changing a molecule, and they're calling it something different. And the Me Too drug, they market as like a new and improved version. But they really don't know if it's new and improved, because when they do the study, they test the drug against a sugar pill in the old drug. They do that, and then with the new drug, they don't test it against the old drug. They test it again against a sugar pill. So how do you know if it's any better? You really don't. It's just another patent. It's just another monopoly, and on it goes. Collectively make more than the GDP of Iraq and Kuwait put together. So just to wrap your brain around the kind of money that...
Well, I don't know what kind of money's in Iraq, to be honest with you. I know you're trying to draw an example here, but what's gone on with the robberies over there then an infusion of bogus American script? It's just like, I don't know what the Iraqi value of currency is. So if you could color that in for me, I guess I'm stupid on that one.
Oh, well, because they're both floating on oil. It's $690 billion. In gross national product. And
it's not too bad.
Big pharma's right in line with them. So drugs are a big business. It cost approximately $1 billion to get a drug approved from start to finish through the trials and then through the FDA.
And the FDA are filled with people that are working or used to be working or that revolving door again, right, with all of these drug companies. Like you spent some time with Roche or one of these people. And next thing you know, you got some kind of a Senate position.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And you're helping to make laws happen that make it affordable. I mean, Dick Cheney did this monster fellow with that Halliburton thing in and out of the office. That guy's been a tumor inside the White House since the 70s with Nixon. Just in and out of that thing, making all kinds of money.
Oh, yeah. He's not alone. Donald Rumsfeld came up a bunch of times.
Have you seen that movie with him, that Errol Morris documentary?
What's it called? The world according to Monsanto?
No, it's about Donald Rumsfeld. I'm just taking a veer off here for a second. It was just a movie about Rumsfeld. It's called, I don't know, I'm Rumsfeld.
I'll have to get that one.
It's an Errol Morris documentary. This guy's one of the best documented, in my opinion, one of the best in the world, and he just puts together some great work, absolutely. And this one is just unbelievable because that guy Rumsfeld, he just does not give an inch ever. And I mean, this is the same guy that did the fog of war a little while ago with James McNamara, who totally recanted on his nonsensical decisions back there in the Kennedy days, you know, with Vietnam and everything. And this guy shows his doubt and his shame and his fear. And it's a very interesting film, The Fog of War. But this one, Rumsfeld, he never admits anything.
And we, you know, it's just like we all know what he said and how it didn't work out. And then later on, he said he didn't say it, but he did, and on and on. I mean, this guy's in some kind of fantasy world, only he's making a lot of money there. And, oh, that was unbelievable to see this movie. I mean, you'll freak out when you watch it because he just never gives an inch.
Well, did the movie go into how he got aspartame approved when he worked at Searle?
Well, I don't want to give it away.
Oh.
But, yeah, he did that too. So tell us about that, because this is a really cool one. Because before you get on this, I have to say, I used to do a joke about this, and sometimes it went over, sometimes not. But I said, if this guy is serious about trying to keep people out of the states that are harming Americans, I'm sure aspartame has harmed many more lives than whatever he claimed was going on over there when they decided to invade Iraq because of 9/11, which weren't connected, you know?
Oh, well, I'm with you 100% on that. And not to get too far off the track, but I remember when that whole war, if that's what you want to call it, was going on, and the way the media presented Saddam Hussein and Osama bin Laden, it was as if you weren't paying attention, you might think that they're the same person.
Yeah.
And a lot, no, I'm serious. A lot of people are like, "Well, we're in Iraq because Osama bin Laden bombed us." Well, Osama bin Laden's not in Iraq. Oh, yeah, he is. He's the leader of Iraq. No, he's not.
It's that dumb, is it? Wow.
Yeah. But in all fairness, the media was using both of those names interchangeably. I mean, kind of, it was fishy.
Well, yeah. I mean, all of that news is so twisted. I mean, that's why, you know, they say things that aren't true. And then this whole thing with George Clooney and some crazy thing in England there saying bunch of nonsense about his wife and his family and everything. I mean, that's not really dire for anybody, seriously. But they did actually get some lives threatened, apparently, over this thing. But yeah, totally irresponsible. And now they're trying to apologize to him. So, I mean, that's just, you know, a celebrity thing. But they also put out all kinds of misdirection. And you got to wonder, this Operation Mockingbird that they put into place, the CIA, as a control means and people working for the company, as they call it, inside the Washington Post and all of the major newspapers and Time magazine to shape and to, you know, create a perception that they preferred, I guess, to steer people along a certain economic line to desire certain things that they want to push, whether it's war or anything else. So this has been going on for a long time, and now it's into this pharmaceutical game, but it's getting people a little addled once you start taking these kinds of drugs.
Oh yeah. It makes me wonder, you know, not to get too off track, but again, when we're talking about SSRIs, which is a big, huge moneymaker for pharmaceuticals, we've got all of our top like psycho gunmen here in the States were on these SSRIs, the Newtown guy, Columbine guy.
The Columbine kids, and yeah, sure, it happens all the time.
Northern Illinois University shooting, the Washington, D.C. shooting.
Well, even, you know, I mean, you guys are gun crazy down there, and I don't know if it's okay to have them or okay to take them away. I'm kind of reserved on that because I can see points for and against on both sides, but not just gun things. Up in Canada here, where I live, this was around 2002. Some fella who was a grandfather, he threw his 4 or 5 year old granddaughter off of a highway bridge onto a big old, you know, 8-lane kind of deal, chucked her down on there on the road, and then jumped off of there too. And this was a terrible event, and people were, oh my goodness, how horrible. And that is the case. It was horrible, but they never, ever investigated the possibility that this gentleman was on any kind of
medication whatsoever. They just kind of talked about it like, oh, it's very strange that this man, you know, he was his grandfather and they knew each other. And, oh, isn't it weird? And, oh, you never know what's going to happen and all of this. Ooh, you know, I mean, gosh, I mean, it just shows you can't even trust anybody you know sometimes. And on with this kind of babble in the news. And what they were never saying was, he's being investigated as to what kind of prescription drugs he might have been on, you know? And then years later, turns out, yeah, that's what it was, actually. It was messed up on a whole bunch of antidepressants, and isn't it amazing how antidepressants lead so many people to be so depressed they'll kill themselves, and maybe a few other people on the way out. I mean, and these guys just get to keep on cranking this dough in. Holy cow. Then you see what the cops are busting people for these days and sticking their knees down on a baby's neck at a mall because he's got an ice cream in his hand he's not supposed to or whatever. I mean, it's just ridiculous how these kind of things are inverting lately.
I agree completely. And I mean, I would go even as far as to question, are we guinea pigs for these drugs? Is there something else going, you know, are we a test run for some kind of mind control experiment? It's just some of the stuff that we're doing these days is too bizarre. What was it, last year or the year before? There was some wackadoo in Florida who
one of the Bush family. Oh, sorry. Different wackadoo. Well, go ahead.
Well, he supposedly ate some bath salts and chowed down on some homeless guy in the street.
Mm-hmm.
Who does that?
I don't know. Not me. I mean, you know, I thought about it. Sure, we all do. But hey, got to curb that stuff when it comes time to do it.
I don't know.
I don't understand what that is. Is that still going on, the bath salt thing? Is that, or did we get a different brand of bath salt, or what's happening with that?
Again, his girlfriend said that he didn't even take bath salt. She said he got high once in a while. So again, was he taking something else, and they're blaming it on? I just don't really trust a lot of the mainstream media anymore.
Was he ex-military?
Right, yes.
That's always a good question to ask. Was he ex-military? Because any time a guy beaks off and goes crazy like this, the military kind of wants to jump in there and say, well, that's got nothing to do with him being in the military. Despite these staggering statistics? Okay. You know, I mean.
Oh, yeah. And then one of my favorite stories, you're probably more than well aware of it being in the conspiracy biz, but there was that guy in what was it, Norway or Sweden?
Oh, right. Anders.
He was dressed up in his Freemason outfit, and he went all camouflage to this island where they had a bunch of young people, young college people were having a retreat, and he killed 60 or 70 people.
Yeah. Anders Breivik, I believe his name was.
Yes.
Yeah.
What is up with that? I haven't heard. I heard, of course, about spree, but... And how Freemason,
but why though? Like, what was that all about? Yeah, exactly. What happened there?
Again, I wonder if he's another mind control experiment, Manchurian candidate type of story.
Well, I guess I can't really figure that out. All I know is they don't really talk about that guy anymore.
Right.
You know, they want to jump on it, too, that it's going to be a Muslim guy sometime, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, some Muslims are... Oh, wait a minute. This guy's as white as it comes and blonde as ever.
Yeah.
And he's acting on his own. Or maybe he wasn't. Who knows? You're right. It could be some kind of Manchurian thing. But I don't know what they're trying to accomplish other than just, you know, cause a little more fear. It's always good to get that going.
Yeah.
So, all right, let's move into... I just want to spend a little more time on the medical industry in your opinion in the book, because
definitely.
As it will soon be heard in a wider sense, in my own personal situation, it turns out that 2013 was a bad year for me. Now, it was a good year because I got a show and people were liking it and the numbers were growing and I was certainly having a great time. Every week putting it out. But unbeknownst to me, I was deteriorating to what was later on quite a serious disease. And so that kind of had something to do with my hiatus here over the last 6 weeks. But oddly, the whole time I was under the weather, shall I say, I was still doing the show. And it was only after I regained my health to the full potential and back to, you know, quite in good shape, actually, and kick this thing, this is when I had to slow down the work. It was like I had to just take a pause and reflect on what a crazy ride that was, which I will get into. We have a couple of guests that are going to come on and help me talk about this thing later on. So that's kind of a show plug for later, but it's also tied in to today's episode because my experience with the medical system from, say, about a year ago, 2013, June, July, through until February of 2014 was a very ugly, ugly road. I'm talking about being recommended to do things that turned out to be later on unnecessary and a lot of nonsense that really shouldn't have happened. And so I made sure a lot of it didn't. And I recorded a lot of it being said to me. So we'll be listening to that in specific detail later on. Ooh, I can hear a law firm dialing up. Anyway, yeah. Should be pretty interesting stuff because I've got some stunning quotes that I figure a lot of you folks aren't going to believe. But I'll make this pledge to you now. When you hear these things, they'll just be snippets from my particular journey, and they will not be edited in any other way than to just drop it into the story where that guy's voice comes up. I'm sure you'll find it fascinating. I'm not finished editing it yet. It's a bit of a monster. Anyhow, the medical journey that I had, the advice that I took, it just was so stunning to me how many wrong turns there were pointing me towards a series of pharmaceutical drugs that I was told eventually would cause some side effects, and you read what the side effects are, and you hope that you don't get any of them, and I got all of them heavy. And so here's the thing about that, is I had to get off of that particular medication, and I realized I didn't need it at all, but I had been told that I not only needed it, I needed it every month and for the rest of my life. And that there was no real alternative if I expected to see my kids grow up. So that was kind of interesting because none of that was true. It was scary at the time to have to listen to this kind of thing. But it's also equally scintillating to so have triumphed over this particular obstacle in my life. Anyway, these guys pointing you along in certain directions, get you on a drug, and then you get a bunch of side effects on that drug, and they're probably going to have to keep you on the drug they kept you on because that's why they put you on the drug. And then one of the other side effects causes such a problem that you need a drug to fix that too. And then you take that drug, and guess what? That one has maybe one or two side effects, or maybe all five, or maybe none of them, but then you'll be on a different drug and that's going to have a side effect. Do we get off that initial drug? No, no, no. We got a different drug that's going to... And this whole thing spiderwebs out just like a rock hitting your windshield. It just keeps on going and going away from the central problem that was the rock hitting the windshield in the first place. And once this kind of occurred to me and I shucked away every piece of advice that I'd been given by these people, I just rocketed back to health in about 3 months. And, well, I'm going to be telling a lot of people a lot more about this story, but I'd like to get your take on it. Dina Ray at dinaray.co with some other books too that we'll also get into later, but this is your newest one. So give us the title of that again.
Big Pharma, Big Agra, Big Conspiracy. And Alan, amen. I can't tell you how many people have taken their own health care into their own hands and have come up feeling better than ever?
Oh, I crushed it. It was so fun. I mean, I don't want to sound like a bullshitter because it's not bullshit, but I realize it sounds like bullshit. It's amazing to actually just sit there and get in on yourself and go, no, I don't believe that's the truth. I don't care that the guy has a white coat. And I've tried some of this stuff and I just don't believe in it. And I kind of flung it the other way. And I can't believe how difficult it was to do that because you're constantly being batted towards the mainstream pathway. And so many people do get pushed around. And I got pushed around lots of times. And just in the medical system, like giving blood and getting blood and being at a desk where you're supposed to do something and then they get mad at you because you don't know exactly where the room is you're supposed to go. And it's like, hey, I'm the sick one here. You're the one working here. Don't snap at me because I don't know what's the second door down on the left after you pass the water fountain. I mean, I don't work here, you know, but they get all chippy and weird. So I don't miss that either. And as soon as you can get that out of your life, it's, you know, much better.
I realize that, your doctor definitely did you wrong and doctors are doing people wrong every day, but that's what they're learning in med school. They are today's pill pushers and you can't really fault the doctors because that's exactly what they're going to medical school for is learning what prescription works with this, what prescription works with that. Instead of other ways to solve health problems.
But that goes right against the Hippocratic Oath that they apparently all have to uphold.
Well,
you're supposed to help someone get to the best they can be and return them to full health, not just use them as a treatment vehicle that they can earn money from.
Well, in the U.S., it started as early as 1980. There's this act called the Bayer-Dole Act, and it essentially made big pharma business partners with medical schools. So big pharma will give a new drug to a medical school, and if the drug does what big pharma hopes it'll do in the study, then guess what? The medical school is in on the licensing royalties. So they're like business partners. So it's to their advantage that the pill works because they'll get money for it. So in a way, they're indirectly paid for these pharmaceutical studies. So when the teachers are testing out the drugs for big pharma, you know, they'll teach a class here and there. And what do you think they're telling the new doctors in the class? They're telling the new doctors about how great this drug is and how great that drug is. So these doctors are essentially brainwashed into thinking that the only way we can solve our problems these days in the health world is through chemistry. And that's what we're getting. We're just here's a prescription for this. Here's a prescription for that.
I remember going to a doctor a long time ago when I was in my early 20s and going in there at my family doctor. I remember he would... He'd say, oh, what's going on, you know, and I'd tell him what's happening or whatever. He goes, oh, well, try this, and let me know how it goes in about 2 or 3 weeks, and if it doesn't work, we'll try something else. It was just like a constant thing. I didn't think it was weird at the time. I just thought, oh, he's the doctor. That's what they do. But then I realized they were just kind of spinning out any kind of pharmaceutical, and yeah. Anyway,
right.
He also had a desk ornament that was some kind of a jaguar, you know, like a puma or something, chiseled out of marble. And it was a place where you put your pens in it and a little clock and everything. And yeah, it was a Pfizer plate on the front of it, you know.
How nice.
Yeah, it was a nice little gift for him to put on his desk made out of marble. Some hunk of junk probably worth about $200 at the time. I don't know. But here's a little perk for you. Pop a couple of these pills down. If the guy doesn't get anything, give him a couple of different pills. See what happens.
Do they ever give you samples of pills?
Yeah, sure. Little packets. Oh, yeah. Right. I forgot about those. Here, try these. Take six of those. Let me know what happens.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, man. Yeah. I remember those little samples. Oh, sure. And calendars on the wall with, like, you know, little company names at the bottom of them and everything. All these little gifts and weird things. Yeah, greases the wheels, I guess. Well, what do you expect to accomplish with your book? Is it going to expose? Because we have a woman in Canada here. I don't know what happened to her. I mean, I really don't. I hope she's around. It's my own ignorance at this point. I can only point to not knowing. But her name is Guylaine Langto, I believe. That's how you pronounce it. And she wrote a book called The Medical Mafia. And a lot of the things you talk about are also in that book.
Well, what I hope to accomplish is just to provide a book for the average Joe Schmo to read and get a handle about what they're eating. Get a handle about what their doctor says. I want people to walk away and say, you know what? Doctors are really just pawns for these pharmaceutical companies. That's all they are. They're not God. They don't know everything. They're just basically pushers for pharmaceutical companies. And we all need to get a little bit more proactive in our health.
In our health.
Yes. Okay. We can't be relying on doctors to fix us up for everything, because as you figured out yourself, they're obviously wrong.
Right. But let's make a distinction, though, because if something happens to you tonight and a hunk of glass comes off a bus and your arm is severed, the first place you're going to go is to a hospital.
Absolutely.
And those guys
be asking for that painkiller like you wouldn't believe.
Absolutely. But those guys are going to just get right on that thing, and they're great at it, you know, that kind of deal. But to be constantly just peppering folks with these pharmaceuticals that cause side effects, for which we have subsequent pharmaceuticals and on, that's no good. That's an unsustainable pattern.
Well, they've got these ADD, ADHD drugs, and that whole disorder is questionable if that's even a disorder. We've got manic depression, major depression, bipolar, all of these they're not new per se, but
that's what bipolar is.
Bipolar, yeah.
They changed the name
of it. Manic, and they've got all of these medications, and they're diagnosing people like crazy. Like 1 out of 10 people they conservatively estimate has at one point in their life, if you live in the United States or Canada, taken antidepressants. So it, you know, you got to kind of question this stuff. They've got all of these products for men and the sex department, and they're coming up with drugs for women in that department. And we've got vaccines for every kind of sniffle that you can imagine, which that's another chapter. Which
how many? What kind of?
I think on some level are a scam.
Are you talking about the flu vaccine here?
Oh yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I don't understand why we don't have more vaccines.
Oh, you're a pro vaccine person?
No, I'm not a pro vaccine person. I'm just saying, I don't understand why there aren't more, because what they're saying is if they give you a needle with some stuff in it that you didn't actually also make on your own, like saliva and hormones and all the other stuff that your body does generate, somehow this one particular department, the immune system, needs that little bit of extra help in a needle. But all of these other systems in the body, they're okay. They get to go on their own. That's okay. You understand what I'm saying?
I do know what you're saying. And
so,
isn't...
I just think that the way they've sold needing to jack up the immune system with needles, injections, or as they like to call them, immunizations. But that's, I like to say, I'd rather go with vaccination there. It's a little more accurate. But I don't understand how there aren't more. Like, why don't we have an endocrine system shot to help us with our endocrine system? Why don't we have a cardiopulmonary shot booster to increase the ability to resist heart attack? And on and on. There's so many more. The lymph system shot to help your lymph system. Your lymph system's got to clean up a lot of stuff. It needs help from this needle. I just can't believe they haven't been able to sell more of them. And no, I'm not pro-vaccine. I just can't believe they haven't done this yet. Kind of like the way they haven't done air yet for sale. But I figure they're working on it.
Well, you're partially right, because they're making about 2 to 4 vaccines a year now. They're trying to get them mandatory in the United States of America. So, you know, obviously whenever a vaccine is mandatory, stocks go through the roof at the pharmaceutical corporation.
Right.
So, it's to Big Pharma's interest big time to come up with as many vaccines as possible. And it's, you know, it's doubled since 2000. So it's a very huge growing business. What's right
double,
now.
What's double? The amount of vaccines that are in circulation as necessary? Is that what you mean?
Oh, yeah. Here, I've got right here. Wait, let me find my note card. I have a have it broken down to mandatory shots starting in 1950s. Here. In 1950s, a two-year-old was required, starting at 2 years old, 13 doses of diphtheria, tetanus, pertussis, and smallpox. By the 1980s, there were 7 vaccines that were required for school and 15 doses. By 2010, there are 16 vaccines recommended, so that's more than doubled, and 69 doses, and that starts at birth. So that's a big, big, big business.
Well, they say, though, that, yeah, well, the science has evolved and we can take care of more things now, so why not?
Well, again, I'm not a doctor, but all of this has to do with your immune system. And if you never give your white blood cells a chance to fight off a virus or infection, then I don't know. And then a lot of people seem to also add on that all of these vaccines might be causing autism, that some of them have a mercury-based ingredient in them. So I don't know. It's definitely something to look at.
Yeah, well, I feel like I should take a vaccine right now for my lungs to help me breathe a little bit better. There's a lot of pollution out there. I could use some help. It helped with so many other things. I might as well get a vaccine for everything. I think they should probably, I'll probably be angering a few people that might be listening to this right now by having this opinion. But I understand people want to vaccinate themselves and, you know, rush to it. And go ahead. You know, I'm not telling you not to. I'm just telling you I'm not going to. That's all. Hope it spreads. Yeah, there's a lot of interesting information in that regard. Pro and con. And this thing is going to never die, that fight. So make your own choice and move on, I guess. And then try not to blame people like us for causing a pandemic somewhere that really we don't have anything to do with. Dina Ray, this is the one I'm going to try. I was hoping I was going to get this right. Let me see how it goes. Dina Ray's rightstuff.blogspot.com.
Yes.
Oh, good. In the rehearsal, I was having trouble saying the word blogspot. Yes, I have a rehearsal. That's basically an equipment tech check. But anyway, Dina Reyes, so that's D-I-N-A-R-A-E-S. Is there an apostrophe in that? No, right?
No. No.
And then Write Stuff is R-I-T-E, stuff.blogspot.com. This is going to be, I'm looking forward to reading your book. I've not read any of it yet. That's the first time I've had a guest on the show. I haven't at least spent a lot of time on most of the chapters or read the whole thing. So, I think I'd like to ask you to make sure that I hit on some of the hot button topics I might have missed because, like I said, I'm not familiar with the book, but I'm going to be by pretty soon. But let me know what I might have missed here.
Well, you know, I don't want to give away the entire book, but
no.
Some of the things that I, some of the research that I found. Was part that was nefarious to me and had New World Order written all over it was this thing they've got in Europe called the Codex Alimentarius. Have you ever heard of that?
I have, yes. Did it start in 1963 or something?
Yeah, that's the one.
Okay. So tell everybody what that is because it's a mouthful, Codex Alimentarius, and I'd like to get your interpretation on it and your concern about it at this moment.
Well, the Codex Alimentarius means food code, and you're right, it technically started in the 60s. But before that, before its grand debut, it was supposedly authored by a Nazi called Fritz Termeer. And Fritz was a big shot at Bayer, another big pharma company. There's just so many coincidences in all of this. And he was responsible for the creating the chemicals that they used in Auschwitz for to gas people. So he was.
What's this guy's name again? Let's hear this one more time.
Fritz, and then Ter, T-E-R, and then Meer, M-E-E-R.
Termeer.
Fritz Termeer.
Fritz Termeer. Huh, okay. I've not heard this name, but you're telling us that this is the. He put the chemicals together for. Oh, man.
Gassing Jews at Auschwitz.
Okay. That's, just at Auschwitz, or did he get the whole contract, you know?
He was the big shot in charge of all of the chemists who came up with the poisons to gas the Jews. So he wasn't just some schmuck that worked at Bayer. He was a big shot.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So carry on then.
Well, he after World War II, he was tried and he was sentenced for 7 years. That's pretty light to me, but he only served three.
For the crime of what?
For war crimes.
Okay. Hmm. And he only did he got served. He had to do seven, but he only did less than that, right?
He served three, yes.
And then he went to Brazil and started a soccer empire.
No. Actually, no. He got hired back at Bayer, which is was now IG Farben. They're both companies are connected, and he became the top dog. So he basically went pretty much back where he started at an even higher position.
Hmm. And that's just after serving a little bit of time, so he had to pay that price and then roll into the millions at the helm of a huge pharmaceutical cartel company.
Yeah. And he is credited with coming up with this whole idea of Codex Alimentarius and then the Food and Agriculture Organization, FAO, and then
we lost you there. A little bit of dropout again. What was that last part? He came up with the Codex Alimentarius.
He drafted it, and then WHO, World Health Organization, and FAO, the Food and Agricultural Organization, got involved, and then we have the official Codex Alimentarius. And the goal is to set universal standards to harmonize food throughout Europe.
Why would that be a goal? What is that? How do you even sell this? I mean, why is that a goal?
I don't know. But again, it's another control put on the food industry. And
well, it sounds ridiculous. I mean, I've been to Europe and I've been to different places, not a whole lot, but I mean, if I don't have any trouble knowing that when I'm in Holland, things are going to be different than when you're in England or France. I mean, of course they are. What are they trying to harmonize?
Well, for starters, the food codex and the people running it do not believe. How shall I say it? They're not particularly fond of fortified foods. What does that mean? That means if, for example, Kellogg's cereal, some of their cereals have, 100% vitamin A, 100% vitamin C, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
They were banned in Europe, and unless Kellogg's changed the fortification in their food, which I think on some products they did, they can't be sold per the Codex Alimentarius.
So if they changed what? Sorry, this sounds so ridiculous. I got to make sure I know what you're talking about.
Europeans are very skeptical on health supplements like vitamins and herbs.
Skeptical of how well they work? What do you mean?
Yeah, that's the conspiracy theory.
Okay.
That's, you know, but they publicly say that if you eat healthy, that you don't need to supplement your diet with vitamins.
Oh, okay. Well, I guess that probably was true once upon a time, but with so much soil depletion, the minerals and the trace elements that are supposed to be in the food that aren't anymore, I think, might not be a bad idea to look at some supplementation and verify the source, obviously. But still, I mean, you know, we're eating a lot of garbage coming from some recycled dirt out there.
Oh, yeah. The Codex Alimentarius is not a set of laws. It's not like law of the land, but what makes it particularly interesting to me, because again, I'm really into New World Order, that if they think that you're selling something that isn't quite right with the food code, they can impose fines. And if you don't pay the fines, because it's not technically a law, they get the World Trade Organization to back them up, and then you get business sanctions as well as fines.
Well, this explains a lot of the little girl lemonade stands that have been getting hit with fines lately. I've been hearing about in the United States of America.
Oh, United States doesn't have a codex yet. They want, trust you me, there's...
Oh, then maybe it's just a police thing, but have you not heard about these little girls getting busted for...
I know, isn't that terrible?
Selling lemonade on their lawn on a hot summer day. I mean, can't do this anymore. I mean, come on, what is going on out there?
Yeah, I know. It's not right.
You know,
but I don't think that's because of health reasons. I think that's just because, you know, the government didn't get their piece of the pie through permits and taxes and whatnot. And
yeah, but if what you're saying is happening in Europe, eventually they're going to try to do that stuff everywhere else, you know, just like merging the currencies and that kind of thing. And then that will be something that will be very heavily enforced in the United States, like those raw milk cats out in California that got busted because they didn't want to run their stuff through getting a pasteurization process. So they arrest them with, like, DEA agents or whoever it was that had guns and stuff to gather all these horrible milk products.
That's in the book, too, the raw milk drinkers. Before milk was pasteurized, how else did they drink milk? They drank it raw.
Straight out of the cow.
Yeah.
Saturday night, baby. Let's do this thing. Oh, yeah. You used to take a big needle and fill it up with vodka, jam it in the udder, and then just climb on underneath. Ooh. We're having a beach bonfire tonight.
I think Kahlua would probably taste a little bit better.
Oh, slides right on down. Fresh cow juice. But yeah, some people still like to drink that thing. I don't know why, if they're not babies. Anyway, it's a pretty crazy choice to make, that one. That whole let's arrest a bunch of people that don't want to drink pasteurized milk. That's what I'm talking about. As soon as this codex notion becomes any kind of law or series of guidelines, even in the U.S., you know they're going to do this kind of enforcement.
Well, so far, the reason that we don't have that is because we have a huge natural supplement industry here. So they got, in 1992, they got this set of laws called DSHEA, D-S-H-E-A, and that protects the natural supplement industry from getting ironed out of food.
Getting what out of food?
It protects that you can sell, that's another thing. In Europe, you can buy vitamins, but they're very, very low doses. Like, we'll buy vitamin C, and each pill has 1,000 milligrams of vitamin C.
Sure.
Well, in Europe, you buy vitamin C, it might have 25.
Oh, really? Because you're only absorbing about a quarter of that anyway.
Right. Right.
If you take it in its water-based kind of form, you take 1,000 milligrams, you're only going to get 250. So you got to jack it right up. And now you're telling me in Europe they've only got 25 in the damn bottle at all? Like per pill?
Yeah. It's very low. And you can either, you know, buy a zillion bottles that are very expensive and just pop a zillion pills to get the, you know, the same amount everybody else takes in the United States. Or you can go to a doctor, which I think is might be the point of all of this. But here are our natural supplements.
They'll prescribe it for you if you go bother a doctor and say, hey, listen, I need a little more vitamin C than 25 grams a day. Can you write me a prescription? Is that what you mean?
They'll thumb up with a longer pill.
Oh, I lost you there, Skype. Come on, baby. What did you just say? Can you just repeat that for us?
I don't know if it's called a prescription, but they'll set them up with a higher dose vitamins.
Okay. Got you.
There's
that
more
time.
Controls on the vitamins. You can't just, like here, I could take a million milligrams of vitamin C and, oh, well, you know, mm-hmm. They're very skeptical on all of that, which, again, I'm not quite sure why either. But in this country, we're protected. Our food is fortified with vitamins. The vitamins industry is a very strong lobby. As long as you don't put on the vitamin jar that it cures something, you can sell vitamins.
Well, that's not a problem because nothing cures anything anymore. You know, they just want it to be a treatment. I'm talking again about the pharma cartel. They don't really want to cure much. They want to keep on going with the medication. Just keep on going. Just keep on going. Keep on taking it.
Yeah.
It's not a cure. It's a treatment. So it's easy to remember that just don't put cure on anything. But there are some cures. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like, for example, St. John's Wort.
Well, that's an unfortunate name, but yeah, I know what you mean. That's the depression herb, right? The antidepressant.
Yeah. I think they put on the label something like enhances mood,
right.
But they don't say can be taken instead of SSRI.
Right. You have to have some creative writing staff when you, yeah. So you get the point across without getting sued or attacked.
Right.
Yeah. Wow. Well, this is kind of interesting because before we go, I mean, we got to get going pretty soon, but I want to hear, let's spend a little time on some of your other books because you didn't just come to this one right out of the gate, and you've written several other things. Let's tell people what those things are and spend a little time talking about them.
Oh, that would be great. Well, I've got 4 novels, and I've written several short stories, which, you know, are in anthologies. They've been in magazines. But my 4 novels are called, the first one I ever wrote is called The Last Degree, and that is about the last degree of Freemasonry.
Which is what?
The 33rd degree.
Okay.
And it's a fictitious book, but a ton of research was done for the book, and it's about Freemasonry and other groups taking over the world in a fictitious situation and creating a one-world government.
How is that fictitious?
Well, it hasn't happened yet. You're right. I think it is a true story.
Oh, sorry. I kind of went down the road a little too far on you. Sorry.
No, you're right, though. It is, to me, it's more of a true story than a novel, but it's technically a novel as of today.
Okay, because just for a second there, it sounded like you were plagiarizing some people at the top of some pyramids. And that would be okay. But okay, so that's neat. And what's that one called?
That one's called The Last Degree.
The Last Degree. Let's spend a bit of time talking about this. How did you come across sufficient knowledge, your own self, to get you comfortable to write a book on this topic?
Well, it was my first book, and I've been a conspiracy buff for since I could read, and Freemasonry, Illuminati, all of that kind of stuff has always fascinated me. And my grandfather was a Freemason as well, and he would never even talk about it. So he was...
That's what I've heard, yeah.
He was a Gabby one, and it was kind of weird. That was the one thing he'd clam up on. And I just found the whole thing very interesting. And I did a ton of research on it, and I learned a lot about Freemasonry and their impact on the world, not just America. But,
I went on a tour of the, I don't know the name of it. It's in London, England, and it's one of the great old, obviously, it's in London, England. It's one of the great old Masonic temples, and they had tours. And I took a tour with some comic friends of mine. We went through there. Some pretty interesting symbology and designs on the ceiling in different places. And then there was this one huge double door, and the old guy was so funny taking us through the tour, and he said something like, now a lot of people... They think that this is, some kind of mysterious secret club or anything, and it's really not. And so don't think that. And then he just kind of carried on with the tour. It was so blatant, his attempt to try to go, hey, there's nothing more than going to a library coming in here, you know? Oh, man. But a very funny place, very strange clothing and ritual clothing, encased in glass boxes, and you could look at various different volumes of things that they read, but you couldn't really take it all in. And if you don't know what's going on there, you really can't know what's going on there. So that's why I was curious how you were able to get a book together all the way on up to the what's said to be the highest degree there is.
Yes, that, and in the book, I point out that most Freemasons are just regular guys who join the lodge for business reasons and to network and, make some friends and have somewhere to go on Friday night, somewhere to go drinking. And that's pretty much the bulk of it. But once you get into these higher degrees, hence the last degree, the 33rd degree, now you're faced with the truth, and you're faced with all kinds of things and all kinds of knowledge and all kinds of power that lower degrees don't have. And again, very well researched book. And
you can't get out if you don't want that? Or, it sounds like, now I got to do all this.
One of the characters did want to get out of it, and and that whole storyline was based on in the 1800s in upstate New York, there was a Freemason that wanted out too, and he got killed. He was murdered. Hmm.
Ritually, I suppose.
Yeah, they yank out the tongue. That's their staple. What is it? The Colombians do the Colombian necktie.
Oh, what's that? Oh, aren't we on the radio? That's a good thing, huh? Oh, you don't want to describe that either. Google, folks. Google, Google, Google. You can't tell them everything. Oh, that's gross. Anyway, all right. So that's the 33rd. Now, do you know anybody else other than your very silent about the matter grandfather that was also a Mason?
Well, after the book was published, I met a couple more Freemasons who weren't very happy about it.
About the book?
Right.
What did they tell you, and how did they know you were the author?
Well, a couple of them left comments on my blog because I have...
Oh, okay. I thought you meant
on my blog.
Sure, okay.
But my favorite Freemason story is I was in my town's newspaper for writing the book, and somebody from my town emailed me from my website and said, "Oh, I'm having a book club, and we all bought your book, and I know you're from this town, and we probably are down the street from you, but would you come to our book club?" And I was just so thrilled, and I just totally honored. I was so excited. It was my first book, and then I'm, you know, invited to something like that. So I get there, and one of the ladies brought a bag of medals and Freemason apron and all kinds of Freemason, the ring, regalia, and started chewing me out and said that this was total defamation and I've got a lot of nerve, and it was a complete fiasco.
Hmm. That sounds fun.
Yeah.
Wow. Did you have anybody else there with you?
No.
Oh, that must have been really fun. Oh, man.
The host was very nice and said I had no idea. This was an ambush. I had no idea how she felt about, you know.
Well, let's get into how pervasive do you think it is based on your research and writing this book and your opinion? What do you think it is that are there a lot of Masons running things like people think? A lot of heads of corporations and.
Oh, I believe this with all my heart. I mean, it's not just the Freemasons. It's the Illuminati, the Bohemian Grove.
Yeah, the Yale Bonesman. And every president's got to be a Yale Bonesman or something now.
Right. That's another
15 guys a year. 15 guys a year apparently get this supposed honor to lie in a casket and give it a tug in front of a bunch of other guys and say all the horrible things they did and whatever else they get on up to in there. And I don't understand, though, how this club, if it's any kind of a legitimate thing, only pumps out 15 people that are already wired into the families that go in there. It's not like anybody's getting to get a new shot at it, maybe once in a while, but pretty much it's genetically lined up. And then 15 of these guys every year, and most of them, if you look at the list of them through history, I mean, most of these influential positions in the United States government and industry are these guys, these 15 guys every year.
Yeah. Did you see that movie, the one with Tom Cruise and Nicole Kidman, Eyes Wide Shut?
Oh, sure. I did see that. Yeah, a couple of times. That's a Stanley Kubrick film, sort of. And,
He died. Well, you probably know this, but he died... like in the middle of the movie when they're filming that whole ritual scene.
Yeah, well, so did a lot of the audiences, by the way, die in the middle of the movie. But it wasn't very well loved. But you know what? I hold out the hope, and it's kind of a blind hope, and it's unnecessary. But I think that if Stanley Kubrick had really finished that film and done it upright, I think it would have been fantastic. But it looks like a bit of a wet mess, and I don't think his... I really don't think his vision... Well, I mean, he died before it was finished. How could it be, you know? It's just not the way it was supposed to go, and I know things were digitally changed after the fact and all of this gross stuff. And I think that's what tanked it because, you know, I was a pretty huge fan of... I am a huge fan of Stanley Kubrick, and that one seemed to me... There's a lot of neat stuff in it, but it just doesn't get there, and I wonder if that were if that was deliberate because he did give away a lot of information in his... films.
Right.
You ever? I've had Jay Widener on the show. He's got a lot of great stuff on that too.
Yeah, he's definitely a great conspiracy topic.
Yeah. So anyway, that's what that was all about. So yeah, some pretty uncomfortable moments. I find a lot of them are a lot of police officers. I remember someone a long time ago. I know that used to. Drive home pretty hammered, and then when the cops would pull him over, you know, a couple of things were said and shown, and the next thing you know, they're kind of following him home, making sure he gets there okay, rather than arrest him like would have happened to anybody else.
Right. And, a couple secret handshake maneuvers. And
well, I don't know what it was, but I was pretty close to this fella at the time, and I knew this to be the truth, that basically he had no worries coming home hammered in a car.
Hmm. Yeah, that's how the world works. If you're in with the in crowd, you can do whatever you want.
Yeah, if you're a Mason. So let's hear a couple more books, and if you're okay with that, if we can
absolutely.
Plug a couple more things.
My other two books, there's four total, but Halo of the Damned and then Halo of the Nephilim, which is the sequel.
Okay.
Well, let's talk about those then. You got a sequel, that's two books, that's one big story. Wow, you, quite a few things to put pen to paper. That's impressive. So tell us a bit about your two-parter.
Well, that one is pretty, it's technically a horror story, but some people have even called it like a sci-fi, and the first one and the second one have been compared by several critics to Dan Brown, which is one of my favorite writers. So that was, those were really great reviews. I'm very proud of it. Again, it has a ton of research about fallen angels breeding with women, producing these Nephilim. And there's just a lot of history brought up in both of the books.
So a Nephilim is, this is some kind of being, that some sort of hybrid being that you're...
A Nephilim, well, it's got a couple of definitions, but the one that I used for the books is a Nephilim is a half-breed of half angel and half human. And what makes it interesting is because just we think of demons as these ghouls and the devil and all that. Or when, but if you read your Bible and you know, study the other ancient writings, the devil was God's favorite angel. So when he waged war on him, he took a third of the other angels with him. Now, if you believe in all of that stuff, which I do, think about it. A third of all of the angels got ousted from heaven. So where did they go? Some stories say they went to hell. Some stories say that they came to earth and they watched women, hence the watchers. And then other stories say before the war in heaven, the reason that they got kicked out was because they were mating with human women. And we've got all of this ancient stories that talk about Nephilim. And one of the characteristics of these Nephilim, this half-breed of angels and humans, is they got six fingers and six toes. And sometimes they're giant height.
I went to a school with a guy like that. Well, he had six toes anyway, but I don't think he was that tall. But that's okay. So this is and they're still here. Is that what you're saying? Or they're on Earth,
yeah,
running around?
Yes, absolutely.
How do we not notice these huge? How tall would they be?
Well, they've in my book they're just human tall. Like maybe the girls, I think 6 feet tall. I had to make it realistic because you can't have someone who's, you know, 16 feet tall interacting with the regular population. You kind of lose the story.
Then you're saying they're changing that at will.
I just thought through genetic adaptation, through each generation, they got shorter.
Just to be able to be able to sort of assimilate somewhat.
But there have been giant skeletons found all over the world. And a lot of people think that they might have been Nephilim.
Okay. I've got to look into this more. Hey, I haven't really paid attention to every single topic that's out there in conspiracy land. But I know there's a lot of different things, and I've kind of focused on what I've focused on. We've only done about 65 shows, and I haven't gone down the Nephilim road yet. It's just, to me, it sounds... it's interesting. I mean, I don't really know anything about it, so I'm fascinated to learn. But it seems interesting if some other huge beings were here and could control their reproductive abilities to sort of be small enough to fit in. What's their end game? What are they doing here? Why don't they just crush us right away with their giant size instead of hanging out with us like a bunch of creeps?
Well, on a side note, I mean, this is my book is my two books are fiction, but to go back with the research of these Nephilim, just a little side note, you know how they've all often wondered how the pyramids in Egypt were built because those granite blocks were so heavy, there's no way.
Sure, the physics are, we didn't really have 10,000 slaves moving these things around.
Right.
Yeah, I understand that. There must have been a different principle, or some people say it was they floated them in because it was completely soaked.
Right.
There's various different theories, but yeah.
Well, the Nephilim is another theory that these giants moved these bricks and created these buildings.
Hmm. Well, there you go. I've got to look more into this because now I can't imagine why a giant would move a thing around like that. I just don't know enough to ask you about it. I'm sorry.
Oh, no problem.
I don't know what to tell you. I don't know much about the Nephilim. Maybe I'll try to get one on the show.
Well,
I'll get on a forum or something and say, hey, listen, if you're one of these Nephilim folks, I'm not going to out you or whatever. Just I'd like to have you on the show and, let's get your point of view on this thing because maybe you're kind of reasonable and you're sick and tired of us being angry with you. I don't know. So that's an open call to any Nephilim that might be listening. Please do contact me, email, Twitter, etc., and I will be happy to speak with you on the air about your condition and your mission. Okay, now back to Dina Ray.
Well, besides the whole Nephilim thing, I got a lot of stuff in the Bible and the Dead Sea Scrolls that are in that book. And I also combined that with a ton of research on advertising and mind control. So the books have a real conspiracy, biblical feel to them, I guess is what I'm...
Okay.
And then my last book, Bad Juju, is...
How is that spelled?
Hmm?
How is that spelled?
Juju, J-U-J-U.
Okay. Just wanted to make sure we weren't going to have a problem with the Broadcasting Commission.
No, it's about Haitian voodoo.
Oh, boy. Yeah, that's been going on for a long time, huh? What's this book about? This is fascinating. Let's go down this road a little bit.
Well, again, I researched my brains out on this one, and it's about two teenage boys who befriend this old man who happens to be a boker from Haiti.
An old man who's a boker. What's a boker?
A boker's kind of like, what's the word? Like a priest, kind of, but a boker is more into raising the dead for zombies. They're more into the black arts.
Okay.
About the voodoo instead of the regular ceremony.
It's almost like kind of a wizard then.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, they befriend this boker, and he opens up to them, and he's all by himself, and he wants to pass on his secrets and his witch spells and et cetera. And the boys get into voodoo, and all of the spells, mind you, are spells that I found through voodoo books that they use in my fiction book. They're using real voodoo spells.
How do you keep track of that? Oh, my goodness.
they're using real voodoo chants. Even though it's fiction, a lot of the things the characters do, I tried to keep it as authentic as I could to the voodoo religion. And that was a really interesting book to write. And
yeah, sure. You're gonna portray that as accurately as possible, and that's going to better convey your story of fiction. Yeah, sure. That makes sense.
One of my favorite resources for that book was A Serpent and a Rainbow by Wade Davis.
Okay, yeah, I think I've seen the movie, but I'm sure I've not read the book, but it's probably not as good,
He was very mad about the movie because it just looked too hokey, because it's a true story, and the movie people made it into a much more hokey type of horror movie than what really happened.
But well, that's got to be tough. Excellent.
Yeah, you've only got one crack at that, and if they're going to mess it up, you're going to be upset with the lackluster result like that.
Yeah.
Huh. Okay, well, that's neat. Now, that's the subject of your, your two books is the Nephilim, and now you've got the, this is the most recent one. I'll just give me the titles of these books one more time, folks. You can see these and get them at dinaray.co. And are they available on the infamous Amazon as well?
Oh, of course. They're available on Amazon. Most of them are available on Barnes & Noble and Books A Million and all of those. And, you know, they're, two of them are on sale for 99 cents. The other two, I think, are $5.29.
Easy, easy. We were just paying 99 cents. You're going to jack it up like five times already? Holy cow. All right, well, we'll see what we can do. And also, Dina Ray's writestuff.blogspot.com. And that's R-I-T-E. Once again, Dina Ray's, R-A-E-S, all one word. Writestuff is R-I-T-E, not the other kind, or the other kind. At .blogspot.com. Haven't said blogspot enough. That's a bit of a tough one for me. Dina Ray, thank you so much for coming on the show. I hope you had a good time.
Oh, it was an honor. Oh. I love your show, and I'm just honored to be a guest. Thank you so much.
Oh, wow. That's a, you don't need to say stuff like that, but thanks. It sounds nice to listen to. I'll admit it. thanks so much, and we'll get back to you soon. Hopefully, we'll talk about how these books are doing, and then you know, maybe I'm going to ask you a few questions regarding my particular medical journey, and maybe there's some stuff in your book I want to discuss, because by then I will have read it. So, thanks for being a guest on Conspiracy Queries.
Well, thank you again for having me.
Thanks for listening to Conspiracy Queries with Alan Park. Please offer comments or complaints by emailing conspiracyqueries@gmail.com or on Twitter at @con_queries or at our website, conspiracyqueries.com. Thanks for listening.